Hello, everybody. This is Dr. Diana Wiley, your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. And I'm so pleased because once again I have Lou Padgett, my friend and colleague. You can find her fascinating, wonderful website at loupaget.com, L-O-U-P-A-G-E-T.com. And Lou is an ASEX certified sex educator and an international best-selling author and entrepreneur of 5 books translated into 28 languages, represented in over 60 countries with 3 million copies sold. That's quite a record, Lou. Welcome to this program.
Well, thank you, my dear. It's lovely to be back again.
Yes, it's always good to have you. And Lou has her own radio program, which is also on Wednesdays, but from 6 to 7 Pacific Standard Time. Lou is based in Los Angeles, and I, of course, am based in Seattle. And I will be on your show again July the 11th, but I was last on your show the 25th. So they can find links to these programs and listen to them on your website.
Correct. And at toginet, toginet.com.
Okay. toginet.com.
Mm-hmm.
But then you do have the links also on loupaget.com.
Yeah, it's at the top of the top on the right-hand side of the homepage.
Yes. And I thought it would be interesting for us to do a little what I sometimes call cross-fertilization, because you did a show on monogamy.
Mm-hmm.
Do you, don't you, whose definition do you use? And so we thought we'd talk about that, and then perhaps in the second half of the show, we would talk about re-entering the dating world.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it should be in reverse. We should probably talk about re-entering the dating world, and then if you go on to marriage and if you decide to be monogamous. But anyway, we'll keep it as it is. So you talked in that program at the end of May about a recent paper on monogamy by biomathematician at the University of Tennessee. And what was the gist of that paper, Lou?
What he was looking at was what were the things that would lead from promiscuity to pair bonding or monogamy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the thing that I found most fascinating about his study is that when now, let's be honest, we're having to look at, you know, data that we are looking at from our observations.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's how would we normally think of, like, the most dominant male being the one that has access to all of the females.
Mm-hmm.
However, what he was saying, and now he's a biomathematician, so what he did is he started using scientific and using mathematical models to see how he could observe a change. And what he looked at is if a less dominant male adopted different behavior, meaning sharing food for sex behavior or mate guarding behavior, when he put those into his equations, then he could come up with a mathematical model for monogamy. So what I find interesting about this is that mm-hmm. it is mathematical modeling, not necessarily what we would think of as a true observational study.
And a lot of the observational studies occur in the wild with chimpanzees and bonobos and that sort of thing. I mean, and of course, Masters and Johnson observed couples mating, but that was a long time ago. And usually we can't directly observe
mm-hmm.
human beings these days, so we get it reported. But
mm-hmm.
but what did his mathematical model, what was the gist of it, other than sharing?
Well, see, and I'll just mm-hmm. read this one thing, you know. His number crunching found that these factors alone were not enough to move a species away from promiscuity, those being mate guarding, males hanging around after females, what they've mated with so others cannot mate with them, and provisioning, again, food for, you know, the female. They did, however, work with a few adjustments.
Mm-hmm.
So what he did is he stopped assuming that all males would act the same. Excellent idea. Because
that's
we
right.
know not all males act the same way. Instead, he tested what would happen if only the lower-ranking males in the group offered food to females in return for mating opportunities. These, as he said, these weaker males had less to lose by switching strategies because they wouldn't get very far through fighting anyway. The other key change was realizing that these low-ranking males would select faithful females.
Mm.
Now, how he came up with that, I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But this is one of the things that when I look at studies, I am always curious to see how statisticians or biomathematicians are giving us information that may or may not be the give us the real deal.
Well, yes, and you, one of the great thing about your books is that you have a scientific background, and so all of this would play into it.
Mm-hmm.
Your books include 365 Days of Sensational Sex,
mm-hmm.
Tantalizing Tips and Techniques to Keep the Fire Burning All Year Long, The Big O, Orgasms, How to Have Them, Give Them, and Keep Them Coming, and How to Give Her Absolute Pleasure, Totally Explicit Techniques Every Woman Wants Her Man to Know.
And then How to Be a Great Lover.
And How to Be a Great Lover. And and then your Hot Mamas was your, I guess, your most recent one,
mm-hmm.
About the Ultimate Guide to Making Pregnancy in the Months Following the Sexiest Time of Your Life. So do you have one book that sort of outsells the other? Or are they?
Oh, there's no question that the one that outsells is How to Be a Great Lover.
That's what I thought. And in the past, you have been so kind to give away that book to the first listener who calls in. And
sure, we can do that.
Okay, thank you. And so if any of you listening have a call, have a question, you may call in to 888-874-4888, and you may ask Lou Padgett. She is such an expert. Whether or not you call in, you'll want to visit her website. It's really, really a good website. So, yeah, so with your scientific background. Now, I know as a sex therapist that some couples, since they're having so much trouble with monogamy, are actually negotiating fidelity.
Mm-hmm.
And so the idea here is for both partners to come clean about what they feel emotionally capable of handling. And what happens is if they really have this discussion and they're very honest, sometimes their intimacy improves with this negotiated monogamy. But it's very, very tricky.
I mean, what we know of, many times when this conversation comes up for someone, they then discover that they have different definitions of what monogamy is.
Yeah, talk a little bit about that.
Well, what they will find is that someone may think there's no problem with going for dinner with an old boyfriend who happens, you know, who's just a friend now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Someone may think, well, that's crossing the line.
Right.
Or someone may think, no, I don't, you know, I don't think it's cool if you're, you know, on the phone or on Facebook with someone who you'd been in a previous relationship with, or someone who you are, you know, why are you having these conversations with them? You're supposed to be only having those conversations with me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so, again, it really depends on how you define what is monogamy or what, I mean, and really when I talk about this subject, I'm looking at what are your boundaries about what makes you feel are the special things that are the behaviors that are only between the two of you.
And for so many couples, that really does include intimate conversations.
There's no question.
And when you start sharing, I mean, this is true for, I see it with my clients for sure. When you start sharing something that's very intimate with somebody else, maybe a coworker, for instance, that feels like a betrayal if the person finds out.
Because here's the other thing that it's a betrayal on. It's a betrayal on the emotional side.
That
you're going to that emotional area.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's that same way. Let's look at it from this standpoint. You have what we call the PDAs, the public displays of affection.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Well, when you have a PDA, there's only certain people that you're allowed to do a PDA with, right?
Right.
Only certain people that are allowed to come that close into your personal space.
Right.
Well,
right.
Having that type of an emotional disclosure is a similar thing for some people. It's like, no, only certain people are allowed to have that type of conversation with you.
Well, it makes sense. Then you get people like Christopher Ryan, the co-author of Sex at Dawn, and he argues that monogamy fundamentally goes against the programming in our DNA that our ancestral tribes shared not only food and shelter, but also sex partners. And by the way, listeners, I will get into this in much more depth because I'll have Christopher Ryan on this program June 20th, the co-author. He co-authored this with this book, which has become a New York Times bestseller, with his wife, who is a psychiatrist in Barcelona, Spain.
Mm-hmm.
He himself is a psychologist and really an anthropologist because this has got a lot of anthropological background in it. But he argues that, and so the term that someone who really promotes Christopher Ryan and his book is Dan Savage, who came up with the term monogamish, and that really is about negotiated monogamy.
Mm-hmm. Well, and here's the other thing I think we have to look at from a realistic standpoint. How much does monogamy actually exist, and have we been conditioned that it has a lot more benefits or a lot more, you know, non-benefits than actually happen?
Well, some people would argue that it has more benefits for women because it's secure.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, if they discover that the man is going out on the marriage, let's talk about marriages for right now, then it's not going to be so secure. But you know, again, back to Christopher Ryan, he would argue that the best way to increase marital stability is to develop a more tolerant and realistic understanding of human sexuality and how human sexuality is being distorted in our modern conception of marriage.
But when he says, I would have a question for him.
Yeah, good.
What does he mean by modern perception of marriage?
Well, our modern...
Since the 1950s or since the 1990s?
I think he would say since the 1990s.
Okay.
That, you know, before we had agriculture and in these primitive societies, there was sharing of food and sharing of partners, sexual partners, but you had unlimited resources of food. There wasn't that kind of possessiveness. And, of course, that kind of early social structure that perhaps even encouraged sexual promiscuity, well, it was a delicate thing, and it was a small, tightly knit group, and really those conditions are gone. They don't exist
right, well,
today.
You know, and the same thing is within marriage itself. What happened with marriage when marriage changed from a couple who worked, you know, when they were working in more of an agricultural society, you did need both partners to be working the farm or the land, and, you know, she would raise the children and then do this and this and this, and he would do this and this and this, and your marriage also was something that often was set up within the village. You didn't marry outside your village.
That's true, and it was very much of a sort of economical arrangement as well, which is what you're suggesting.
You didn't step outside of things. You were... But here's what I look at with monogamy is that I think people get beaten up by it, women and men.
Mm-hmm. And say more about that, Lou.
That people are, if they have a thought about doing something, they might think, oh, my God, I'm so guilty for doing that, you know, and I shouldn't have been thinking like that. Or they see someone who they go, ooh, now that would be, you know, that would be fun to have fun with.
Mm-hmm.
And then they beat themselves up because they looked at something other than their partner. Well, we've made monogamy not be a safe thing for many people. We've made it be kind of like this tyrant that tells people, you have to listen to what I'm saying.
Hmm.
Do you understand what I'm meaning by that?
Yes. But say a little more. I think you're making a very good point.
When people come to me and they say, you know, I'm worried because I feel like I'm not being able to have as much variety in my sex life as I'd like to have. Well, the thing that they don't want to hurt their partner's feelings, but what they want is, it's almost like they want to create a definition of monogamy that isn't completely black and white.
Mm-hmm.
So are they wanting to do different things online?
Mm-hmm.
Are they
mm-hmm.
wanting to, you know, maybe share a different, you know, have a different fantasy? Because for some people, even the their partner's fantasy mm-hmm. has them feel they've crossed a boundary.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And monogamy, you know, I think, as something that makes people feel, wow, I'm really special and I love this about my partner, that it's just the two of us are going to be sexual together.
Mm-hmm.
That feeling is great when people both are on the same page. But when someone is feeling that it does, whatever they do, they're constantly going to be judged or it's not going to be okay, again, that's because there's two different definitions of it.
Yes, and if a couple decides to do this negotiated monogamy, there really are usually consequences, like enduring resentment or even falling in love with somebody else, which can be very threatening to a couple.
Hugely. I know couples that have had that happen,
mm-hmm.
as I'm sure you have as well.
Yes, and I think that it... But still, if a couple is curious, they might start by, and I encourage this a lot in my practice, reinventing sex in the context of a monogamous relationship first, so that they can explore fantasies and new positions and toys, and following a lot of the tips you lay out so well in your books, the techniques and the tips. But reinventing it first within the relationship to see what they can do. You know, if they're dying to have a threesome, for instance, maybe they start with a fantasy of that third person in the room, and they talk about that, and they explore that fantasy.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, I mean, you and I both know
mm-hmm.
that fantasy in and of itself can be tremendously powerful, but also keep it as a fantasy, because sometimes if you do try and do your fantasy, it doesn't turn out the same way that you think about it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, that's very true. A lot of people have tried threesomes and it hasn't worked out, and jealousy rears her his head, and it's a problem. For others, it does work out, but they have to be, I think, quite evolved and mature and have a very solid primary relationship with lots of communication.
Well, and here's what monogamy, I think we're coming back to,
the
pivotal point about it, is that it's about communicating and it's about telling someone what feels comfortable for you and what doesn't.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And many times people make the assumption that if they are in a committed relationship, this is, you know, they're both going to be thinking the same way. Mm-mm.
Yes.
Couldn't be further from the truth.
Yeah. There was a piece in the Wall Street Journal a few days ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I've just come over to my desk to get it because it was written by Elizabeth Bernstein.
Oh, I saw it.
Yeah, what couples want to know but are too shy to ask. And she found that when she talked to marriages about, she talked to people about their marriages and long-term relationships, and she would hear the same question over and over. How do I say I'm not satisfied with our sex life?
Mm-hmm.
That is a very hard conversation for so many to say, to ask.
Mm-hmm.
And
very.
Yeah, and then this is still a part of what we're talking about, but I love what she says ways into the piece, and that is breaking the ice, having trouble discussing problems with your sex life, with your spouse. Here are some ways to make it easier. And the first one is so good. Be gentle. Need an opening line. Here's the opening line. I love you, and I'd like to feel more connected to you. More connected.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that could be about not having enough sex, or it could be about maybe exploring some fantasies.
Or it could be, I want to be held more at night.
Yes. Oh, that's beautiful.
Or it could be, you know, I used to have the feeling of being really special
mm-hmm.
for you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And now I don't have that. And here's
mm-hmm.
the thing.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't read the entire thing. Did she also go on to say that you have to be completely responsible for how you feel, not that they're making you feel this way?
Yes, in that she says don't ascribe blame. Don't psychoanalyze. Just describe what you feel is the problem. You mm-hmm. seem much less interested in sex than you used to be. And ask if your partner has noticed this as well. But don't blame, just describe what you observe.
Mm-hmm. And
so in doing that, you're also taking some responsibility, but you're not just pointing the finger.
Right. I also suggest to people, and I think we've mm-hmm. discussed this, that this conversation be one that you have outside of the bedroom.
Always, and she says that too. Never discuss sex right after having sex.
No.
Unless you only have good things to say.
Right. Because otherwise, uh-oh.
Yeah. So you can have the discussion in the kitchen, on a walk, taking the drive, but not in bed. And
no.
unless it's all positive. Oh, that was just great. Wow. That sort of thing. Yeah.
Now, when I look at monogamy, I don't think everyone, you know, has to believe in monogamy. I think it's something that is up to you. I think it is something that I had men in my last show that I did on monogamy.
And what show was that, Lou?
That was my show last on May 30th.
Oh, of course, yes.
On my TogiNet show.
TogiNet show, yeah.
And what I looked at was, instead of, you know, concentrating on, you know, because we often will hear mainly from women,
mm-hmm.
I wanted to have the male perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And what the men were saying is that, you know, are they tempted by other women? Yes. Have I been unfaithful? To a degree, yes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he said, I thought that I could preserve our exclusive relationship by drawing power from the fact that we were exactly that, exclusive.
Ah, yes, exclusive.
Right, and no one could experience the intimacy we shared because we simply were devoted to keeping it that way.
Mm-hmm.
That is a powerful statement and intention, yet I have still strayed. Is it fair to put it down to scientific programming? I don't know, but I'd like to look at it that way. Am I a bad man? Not at all. Actually, maybe you should decide.
Mm-hmm.
But here's where, when I speak to people, and let's talk about women, Diana, who have had affairs.
Okay, let's talk about women who've had affairs.
They do the same thing that I observe that men do. They don't want their partner to know because of the ramifications.
Yes, and more women, of course, are having affairs because they have more financial freedom.
Not only do they have more financial freedom, you know, they have more time and they have more things that, you know, no longer is it that you only can go for dinner with, you know, someone who's your partner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, listen, you and I travel, and I travel a fair amount.
Mm-hmm.
Finding someone to do things with is actually pretty easy.
Yes, yes,
It's not a skill set. As a matter of fact, it's awfully damn easy.
Yeah,
so
that's right.
When I look at it, I go, okay, you have to look at the importance of your relationship for you. Whichever way things stack up.
Mm-hmm.
And when I looked at, you know, the woman who I was speaking with, she is someone who had dealt with a partner who had an affair.
Mm.
And the big thing that this one woman said, she said, the thing that keeps me going forward is that this is a really, really good man.
Oh, that's a beautiful statement. Yes, yeah.
You know, she said,
and she recognized that.
She said he's a good man, but mm-hmm. she said what I realized is the way that we are going to go and make this relationship work,
mm-hmm.
because they don't want to divorce.
Mm-hmm.
She said, I have to look at, as we call it, looking for the gold.
Mm-hmm.
But she said, I also cannot focus on that's happened.
Mm.
She said, I can't do that. Because
mm-hmm.
she said, that keeps me back there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he has ended things. But, you know, there still is that fragility of feeling, will it happen again?
Well, of course, of course. We're coming up to the half-hour break. I wanted to say to our listeners that if you have a question for Lou Padgett or for myself or for both of us, please call in 888-874-4888. And if you're the first caller, you will get to have her book sent to you by the great author, Lou Padgett, How to Be a Great Lover. And so please do continue to listen. We're going to talk just a little bit more about monogamy, and then we're going to go on and talk about re-entering the dating world. So stay with us, please. We are back. This is Dr. Diana Wiley, your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. And I'm here with Lou Padgett. And again, if any of you have a question for Lou, you'll get to win one of her five books, How to Be a Great Lover. We've been discussing monogamy and monogamish. Mm-hmm. And a little bit about sex at dawn, and this University of Tennessee biomathematician's ideas about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought before we move on to re-entering the dating world, this would be in case you get a divorce as a result of all of these dilemmas. So, but one more point that you and I spoke a little bit about off the air, Lou, is that from a cultural standpoint, the idea of strict monogamy has far less currency within the gay male world than it does in the straight world. And I was talking to one gay man, and he said that he thought that probably half of the gay male couples are in open relationships. And so from the sex at dawn point of view, Christopher Ryan and his co-author wife say that gay men have done this self-examination just in the process of coming out, and that from experience, men and women know that love and sex, men know that love and sex are very different things, and that women may think that that the experience of sexuality has more to do with emotion and emotional intimacy. And you made a very good point off the air, and that is that, well, let's talk about women and what it would be like for them. Of course, women have been persecuted for the last 5,000 or 6,000 years or so for any hint of infidelity. So maybe their true sexual nature has been rammed down.
Well, Diana, I don't think there's any doubt that the truly, if there were the very highly sexualized female, she would have been killed off.
Well, some of them were supposedly killed off as witches.
Right, and
burned.
Any woman who, I mean, that would not have been a genetic trait that typically would have been carried forward.
That's a very good point.
You know, she wouldn't have survived, and if she had daughters, they wouldn't have survived. And but to go back to monogamy in and of itself, let's look at the actual numbers of monogamy at the turn of the century. Let's go with Stephanie Kuntz's work. She talks about, you know, the way we never were from a cultural anthropological standpoint. And, you know, marriage as, you know, it isn't this, you know, great thing where everyone goes, oh, in the good old days. Listen, in the good old days, at the turn of the century, people got deserted. Marriages were shorter. The people died.
Much earlier.
Oh, yeah. So the term monogamy, well, I mean, monogamy got put into place so that people knew who mom and dad were. And the main idea...
Especially dad.
Mm-hmm. But what they wanted... we knew who mom was.
Mm-hmm.
But the number one thing was that they wanted to protect the legal transfer of assets.
Yes, that's right.
That's the whole reason behind it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a financial reason.
Mm-hmm.
It is an assets reason, whether it's title, land, money, whatever it may be.
Yeah.
It's going to be the transfer of assets. So from a female standpoint, yes, perhaps she was more, you know, when she remained monogamous, she knew she would be safer for her and her children.
Yes.
But from an emotional standpoint, that might not have been the case. And, you know, I don't care what anyone tells you. If you're the person who's being fooled around on, it hurts.
Of course it does. Of course it does.
Even if it's a known cultural thing, oh, well, we know in Europe everyone does that. Well, that doesn't mean it doesn't hurt. If you're rejected, you're rejected.
There does seem to be, in Europe, and particularly in France, there does seem to be a more open attitude about, say, a man having a mistress. Years ago, I lived in Italy for a summer, and I was in my 20s. I was very impressionable. And frankly, I was a little shocked to see how, especially upper-middle-class and wealthy men and in their marriages, they'd have a mistress. They'd have the wife. The Madonna whore kind of dynamic went on a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But it was like the wives would look the other way, as long as they had their house and their children and their security. And it was just more accepted.
Well, you know, I was just in Mexico.
Yes.
Doing speaking presentations through, you know, different countries in Latin America.
Mm.
And they refer to it, I'm not going to get the term, I'm not going to describe it correctly, but that there was the little house, and then there was the, you know, the main house, but there was also the little house that the husband had. And I asked specifically, is this something that is dependent on the size of someone's wallet, meaning he'd have to have enough money? And they said, absolutely not.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, I thought so, too.
That goes against conventional thinking, or...
Right. They said, no, it doesn't. It's just they want to be able to show that they can have X number of children. And I'm like...
Wow.
Huh. Now, that's... And people saying, you know, they are, you know, 35 years old and discovered that their father has another woman with whom, you know, she, you know, he had four sons.
Mm.
But, you know, anyways, but the monogamy in and of itself, was created in order to ensure that we know who's going to get what.
Well, that's right. And that's when Sex at Dawn says that the more promiscuous living occurred pre-agriculture, pre-possessions, and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Very ancient, primitive societies. So, all right, you had another... Can we move on?
Absolutely.
Although, if any of you listening have a question about monogamy, or maybe you'll have a question about what we're going to next talk about, which is re-entering the dating world, and if you go to loupaget.com and you want to hear more about this, you can actually listen to her, to this show on re-entering the dating world, as well as the monogamy show. And that would be either her website or toginet.com, T-O-G-I-N-E-T.com.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you had your sister on this show as a guest.
Yes.
And she's your twin sister.
Absolutely.
Yes. And she lives in Toronto because you're Canadian, although you've lived in the U.S. a long time, I think.
Almost 25 years now.
Yeah.
So this time, because I lived in New York before.
Okay, good. So your sister has re-entered, or is about to re-enter, the dating world.
Mm-hmm.
And what did she say on your show?
Well, what we were looking at is, you know, she herself is, you know, re-entering, you know, going, you know, ending a very long-term marriage, and which was her choice to do so. And she is looking at the people who are kind of like, you know, 6 months or a year ahead of her in what they're going through. And we were having, you know, we'd have discussions about it. And I was saying, listen, there's some things that are just absolute red flags.
Yeah, red
and some things that this is, you know, when you're looking for a partner, that in order to prepare yourself better, and you and I were speaking that you and, you know, your partner, Brian, had done a dating workshop.
Yes.
And, you know, you met on Match.com.
Yes, we did, over a year and a half ago.
Right. And she is, you know, some of her friends are meeting, you know, people on dating websites. But one of the biggest things that they keep doing is they are being so, they haven't looked at, you know, you say, you know, write out your goals. Make sure you know what you're looking for. What I suggest to people, and I'm going to borrow this straight from Darren Hardy, who did this in when he was looking for, you know, his wife. Okay, you know all the traits you want to have in that person. You know all the things that you think are going to be just perfect for you are going to snap your head and you're going to go like this. Yeah, baby. If that person has all of those great traits, why would that person be interested in you?
Well, exactly. And I say, if you want to date and have a relationship with a great person, you must start by being a great person yourself.
Honey, you're only as magnetic as you present.
Yes.
And, you know, listen, your energy of what you give off is what you're going to pull back in. And that was one of the other things we spoke about. Listen, if you look like you've sucked lemons, who cares? That's just not attractive. And there is nothing, you know, when we speak of straight men here, there is nothing for most men that is less appealing than angry women.
Oh, yes, angry women and also desperate, needy women.
Oy, oy, oy.
Yeah.
Now, so we looked at that. And then we also looked at, please, let's be honest, if you look like bruised fruit, get yourself in shape.
Hey, bruised fruit. Oh, dear. Yes.
And, you know, I got that from a gentleman who, he said, oh, my God, I'm going back into the dating world. He said, I have got to get to the gym. He said, I do not want to look like bruised fruit. I won't be chosen.
Won't be chosen.
And I thought, oh, my God, that's really, how great. So, and here's the one thing that, you know, she and I spoke about, you have to be realistic also about who you are and what you're looking for at whatever phase of life you're in.
Exactly, and it's a little different if you're over 50 than if you're under 50. When we talk about goals, I talk about creating a romantic resume, a romantic one, writing out your own qualifications, and it can help you reassess and affirm your good qualities. And stating your desires helps you focus on what you want. We often seek in others what we wish for in ourselves, you know, that mirroring thing that goes on, particularly when we're younger.
Right. And here's the other thing we both know.
Yes.
There is not a hole in the ground big enough for you to have someone else fill up what you may feel needy about.
Oh yeah, the deep pit,
right?
The dark deep pit.
And if you have something, it may mean going and doing some work on yourself,
doing some inner work, doing some therapy,
right? Or it may mean sitting down with. I say this to women. Listen, if you have some really honest male friends, ask them how men perceive you. The way you dress, the way you speak, how you present. Because what men typically look for is they're looking for a woman they're proud to be seen with, and that the other men in the room would want to be with.
It's a very good point, Lou.
The proud to be seen with rules out the women who have everything cut up to here and there and the breasts on a platter and, you know, because, you know, the other men in the room may want to be with that, but they're not proud to be seen with it.
Yeah. So then if you're proud to be seen with a woman, the woman could take on a little bit of the trophy girlfriend.
And no, if that's what someone's into. But here's the other thing. You have to be honest about what your own really terrific characteristics are. I just had a conversation with a woman who she doesn't think of herself as being, you know, such a great catch. I mean, she just graduated from, you know, she just finished her residency, is board certified in, you know, two specialties, internal medicine and cardiology. And she's not thinking, she doesn't have the feeling about herself as being desirable. And I'm like, where's the little point inside her brain? Where's the reset button? Because your attitude about yourself is what you're going to pull in.
Pull in and project out.
Correct. And what I tell people is, listen, you can make a list, but you have to make your own balancing list. And they have to match, and you have to be realistic.
To be realistic, I have a handout, and so it goes like this. Self-images can be deceiving, so think how others' perceptions and your perception might differ. And then circle the words that you think would describe how other people perceive you now, then make a check by the same word you believe portray how you really are. And then I have descriptors like happy, scared, unhappy, trim, confident, secure, sad, bright, anxious, honest, warm, angry, naive, sexy, lonely, distant. You get the idea. There's a whole list of descriptors. And because life choices and self-improvement can open us up to the potential bounty of our lives, but our perceptions have to pretty much line up with other people and also give us a clue where we might need some work.
Well, true, and here's one of the other things I say to women who are very accomplished or have been on their own for a while. You have got to let someone know that they're particularly, again, you know, whether you're straight or gay or, you know, bisexual, if there isn't a place for someone to come in to make contribution to you, they can't come into your life.
That is such a good point. We don't talk enough about that.
No, we don't.
And, yeah, because a man wants to feel like he can contribute something. And
you know, absolutely. And so saying, the attitude of I can do it all.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, you can do it all.
Mm.
If you want to be by yourself.
You want to be by yourself. So the woman needs to make space for the man and say, gee, it's so nice to have you in my life, and I feel safe with you and protected, and you make me laugh, and I can be a little softer if I'm, you know, if I'm a very self-sufficient woman, I can be a little softer. And I often say it's a nice thing to be able to say, you know, honey, if you're serious about somebody, you know, honey, I want you even more than I need you. I can live without you, but I can live better with you. So there's
oh, no,
that
that's
want
a, you
need
know what?
Thing.
Talk about music for someone's ears. Hmm?
Yes.
But
yes,
I
can live better with you. You know, I can do without you, but my life is greatly enhanced by living or being with you, even if it's not living.
Uh-huh. When we speak of, like, creating the space for someone to come into, it can be those conversations. What it also can be is that person can know that, listen, let me take care of your car. Let me take care of something. Let me help you with that accounting thing that you're dealing with. And doing something that makes you feel taken care of.
And in general, men are more hardwired to do that thing, to protect, to take care of. And they're often better at fixing things, too, including cars.
yes, sometimes that's the case. Now, let's look at what do women need to bring in for men.
Yes, let's look at that.
What I see is most men sign up to be in a relationship with a woman when they know that she has his back is one of the things,
mm-hmm.
and the other is when she is kind.
Well, absolutely. The kindness is so important.
And
I also think that the man really does want his woman to be sexually enthusiastic and adventuresome.
And to be sexually in sync with him.
Yes. And that may not be perfect in the beginning, and that's why I do sex therapy, or that's one of the reasons. But
it's also that it's having him, at no time does a man feel more male, more masculine, more connected to who he is primarily as a man than when he is being intimate or sexual with his partner of choice.
That's very true.
And so with the man, but when I've asked men, why did you choose her? You know, it's sort of like a foregone conclusion that this woman will turn him on.
Yes.
That it is her behavior of kindness and acknowledgement that had many men choose these women.
Kindness and acknowledgement. And I've talked about this before on this program, but I do see a lot of relationships wither from emotional undernourishment. They start taking each other for granted, and they stop saying, this is what I value, this is what I appreciate about you. And if that isn't happening during the courting stage, that's a big red flag.
Hey, you know, I'm going to borrow from, there's a woman by the name of Joyce Myers that people may know of. She has Joyce Myers Ministries.
Right.
And Paul listens to some of her stuff, and he loves to cite her thing about, what you don't feed dies.
What you don't feed dies?
Dies.
Yeah. And Paul is, of course, your partner.
Right.
Yeah.
So if you're not feeding your dog, your plants, your relationship, your marriage, something's going to take, and there's going to be an impact.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you and I both know that when you're in a relationship that's working,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't feel like work. It feels like
isn't that the truth?
You know, when it's working, it doesn't feel like work. That's why I always hear these people go, it's so much work. I'm like, my God, it sounds like you're dragging a boulder up a hill.
Yeah. It doesn't feel like work. It feels more joyful. And
no question.
And there's that anticipation of being together and being intimate.
And knowing that, this is the one thing I tell people, let that person know that they make your heart smile.
I love it. You've used that expression before. I think that's a beautiful expression. You make my heart smile.
Because when someone can do that, it's like the same way. If someone can make you laugh,
mm-hmm.
they get you on another level.
Oh, absolutely. And that's another thing to look for if you're in the dating world. Do you share a similar sense of humor? If you don't, things could be rough. I mean, it's so nice to have a joke that you might say, might give, and have your significant other or even the person you're just dating to laugh. And it's like applause. Laughter is like applause. Just like in a sexual relationship, an orgasm is like applause.
Exactly. It's kind of like the finish.
Yes. And, you know, the other thing, and I think about Brian in this way, in addition to what we've been talking about, you know, I've thought that every place he goes is much better for having him, and everyone he's with is much happier when he's around. And so,
and that's a lovely statement.
Yeah, and I feel that way deep in my heart. So that means I'm very much in love, and the relationship is really working. Ta-da! As you know, I was a widow for many years till I met Brian, so he's welcome in my life.
And you know, you also did a lot of work on finding someone who was the match for you, Diana.
Yeah, because I used to live in L.A., and you saw, I kissed a few frogs before.
You know, and had people who weren't really honest about who they were.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, you just said, you know, I'm just going to keep doing this, and, you know, you take a break, and then you go back, and you take a break, and then you go back.
Well, thank you, Lou, for noticing how I persevered and stayed optimistic and clear.
You know, and you did, and you would, you know, giggle and say, you know, kissed a few frogs. But you know what? They were nice frogs for someone else.
Oh, good. Oh, let me write that down. Because that's very good, you know, and I've thought about that in terms of even the divorce that I had from the father of my children, and I thought, you know, I'm going to release him with kindness,
mm-hmm.
because there is somebody else out there for him who is much better suited for him than I am. And sure enough, he found her, and they had two more children together, and and they've been married a long time now.
Well, you know, one of the things that I think we need to be responsible for is we're responsible about how we get into a relationship, but we also have to have that same responsibility when we end things. Because
speaking of ending things, I'm sorry to interrupt you.
Are we done, darling?
Well, because they like me to stop a few minutes before the hour. So we are, but of course we'll be back again, because you and I just love doing radio together. And
yes, we do.
So loupaget.com, everybody, loupaget.com. And thank you, Lou, for once again being just such a fascinating, knowledgeable guest.
My pleasure. Absolutely my pleasure, Diana.
I appreciate you so much. And next week, everybody, David Steinberg. We're going to talk about sexual shame and sex, people with disabilities and sexuality. So that should be a pretty interesting show, too. So please join us. Thank you. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye, Lou.
Bye, Diana.